Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV. Thanks for watching the Reason TV talk show with myself and Michael Moynihan. Today's guests are Megan McArdle of The Atlantic and Joe Garden of The Onion. Our big story today is that Nancy Reagan broke her pelvis. How is The Atlantic covering this story?
Well, you know, we've got Andrew Sullivan on the issue full time.
Is he getting medical records already?
The CAT scans are on their way now.
You know, we've got full-time tag team coverage. Mm-hmm. We're going to be doing 24/7 live.
Is Amber is going to be on this one?
I mean, obviously, we're going to have to pull him off the election.
Okay.
Well, I mean, this really is the election.
I think
now.
So.
How are Obama?
I don't know what the McCain campaign means by this, but I think it's going to work.
This is the October surprise we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
I think this was really the exciting moment, the pivotal moment, where it really just going to throw it for McCain. So I think
I'm hoping that he'll fly back to Washington to craft a plan to deal with.
You know, this is where if Ron Paul was president, I would be very comfortable right now. He's a medical doctor and a gold bug. So, Megan, what you know, the election is soaking up all of the oxygen. What who are you going to vote for?
I'm voting for Obama. I have a deep and passionate loathing for John McCain that I've nursed for quite some time. So, basically, since McCain-Feingold, even if I hadn't disliked him as intensely as I do, he sort of represents everything that I hate about the Republican Party in like one neat little package.
You mean he's a hero, a patriot?
Yes, he loves America, which obviously I despise.
Right.
No, I mean, like, I feel like he sort of, you know, he got the free market stuff because it came as part of the conservatism combo pack, but he really doesn't care about markets or spontaneous order or anything that I care about. He basically cares about, like, kicking foreigner butt. And even if I hadn't deeply disliked him, the way that he flew back to D.C., in order to scuttle a plan in favor of getting the Republicans to hold out for a much worse plan. And generally, like, you know, he's got massive impulse control problems that I don't really think we need in charge of the economy right now.
So you think the president runs the economy?
No. I don't think the Republican can. I don't think that the president can make the economy much better. I do think the Republican can severely tank it. You know, the president can severely destroy the economy if he wants to. And John McCain displays some interest in doing just that. So,
who are you going to vote for, Joe?
Well, it's time to get on the winning team.
That's right.
John McCain in 2008.
Yeah, well, these are cups from 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Which
the real
we
election,
got a bunch. It's not just about Coke and Pepsi.
No,
right.
They didn't have a Chuck Baldwin cup, unfortunately.
What I want to know is which one's great taste and which one's less filling.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'd say Obama's probably the great taste. He has a much better wardrobe. The less filling, I'd say. We've seen Sarah Palin excerpts. I think we can.
Yeah. But don't you? Why do people hate Sarah Palin?
I think she's just a fake. I think it's because she's just a fake populist. I mean, I kind of like her because it's sort of, you know, from a satirist point of view, it's fun to watch the train wreck unfold. But after a while, as a satirist, you just can't go any further than she's gone. You know, you can't have a. You know, it's funny because I was thinking back on for the 2012 election, it would be great to have a Quayle and Palin campaign. It's like two of the most loathed vice presidential candidates ever.
Right.
But I think, you know, I guess I don't like her fake populism, and I don't like...
What's fake about it?
I feel like she sort of comes off as a sort of, aw, shucks, look at me. I'm just like one of you, but... She's not just like one of me because most people I know realize their limits and don't try to become governor of a state that they, you know, or they don't try to become the
president.
Do we
know that Alaska really exists?
No.
I have a cousin.
Not that I'm aware of.
I have a cousin who claims it's there. He's he's there right now, or so he says.
Hasn't one of your employees actually recently gone to Alaska on vacation?
You know, I don't. When they're on vacation, that's their time. You know, they're off the clock. They're off my mind.
Well, I feel like it would have been a good time for a reason to pursue this story.
That was Alaska before Palin was picked.
Joe, for the Onion, there was John Stewart who said, I don't know, a couple of months ago, we don't make fun of Barack Obama because there's really nothing to make fun of, or words to that effect. They said, you know, we're really not piling on him because it's difficult to. Do you guys find that, or, I mean, and if that is the case, I mean, that'll be a difficult 4 or 8 years, right?
It is. Well, it's hard right now because he, you know, McCain. It's easy with McCain because McCain represents the status quo, and Obama is definitely not the status quo. It's a, you know, it's a well, either way, it's a historical race. You know, it's either going to be the oldest president or the blackest president.
Yeah,
right.
And so. I think
you mean because Bob Barr is going to win?
Yes, because Bob Barr is a. We all know his secret. His secret past.
I think so.
But he's.
We don't need to talk about it.
Right. I'm sorry. We should. Should we stop the tape for this?
I don't. It's too late.
We have to.
Yeah. There's nothing in the camera, by the way.
Yeah. This is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But So I mean, it's hard to. I mean, it is sort of hard to get a grip on it. What we do is like. You know, you can make fun of the people that you sort of like gravitate toward the message of hope without really understanding what else they're gravitating toward. But to make fun of him, we have to wait until he's in office. It's not really easy to make fun of people that are, you know, until he becomes the status quo, he's going to be hard to make fun of.
How much does race factor into? I mean, does it make it more difficult that he's black to make fun of?
I don't think so. I mean, he's not. It's not like we avoid making fun of him because he's black. We don't. But then again, we wouldn't make fun of a candidate because he's white. So you don't really, you know, it doesn't really matter that much, for all intents and purposes.
You did have that headline, that brilliant headline.
The black man asks nation. Black man asks nation for change.
Change, yeah.
In that case, it was a. You know, it was a very good. That gave us a good in.
Any blowback on that? None. Okay.
He didn't return our calls before. He doesn't return our calls now.
Okay. Is Christopher Buckley going to resign from the Onion, I hope?
Well, actually, we don't know. He hasn't. He hasn't returned my call either.
How do you maintain? I mean, this is actually, and I'm interested in the Atlantic's kind of take on this stuff too. But I mean, the Onion has been phenomenal. I think in a way that a show like the Daily Show with Jon Stewart. I mean, it. The politics of Stewart bleed through in a way that makes him less funny, I think. And The Onion has been spectacular. I mean, it's like as funny as it's ever been. And I don't know. Yeah, I mean, because you guys obviously have politics.
Right.
But you manage to kind of, you know, you don't let that get in the way of being funny.
Right. We're a disparate group of doughy, pasty, white guys. And I think we all bring a diversity of doughy, pasty, white guy opinions to the table. And I think we try to make a conscious effort, too. We don't want to just come out, you know, we're trying to actually plan our election coverage. And because we come out, you know, because we don't function as a real news organization, we're choosing headlines for both an Obama victory and a McCain victory.
Right.
And so we're trying to, you know, so we basically had to spend a week and a half choosing headlines that would actually go for an Obama
victory. Who came up with the Kelly cartoons, by the way? I think that is the single funniest thing that has been invented in the past couple of years. I mean, the Kelly... Do you ever read these, Megan? The fake editorial cartoon in The Onion by Kelly is just great.
Well, he was also our blogger for the RNC and DNC. He's actually, that was the creation of Ward Sutton, who did a very straight liberal cartoon or lefty cartoon for the Village Voice called Sutton Impact. And he, you know, he and Scott Dickers actually collaborated because we decided that we wanted to start running that. And, you know, it's actually just wound up being great because, you know, it's the only time I can give somebody feedback. It's like, can you make that group of ethnic people a little more stereotypical?
Right.
Can you put a sombrero on the Mexican in that one? Because it's supposed to, you know, the thing is he's so far out of touch, and he, you know, he has. it's also fun because like periodically you get to you get to try to like steer him away from the politics, and because he always goes back to that. But we try to get him to reveal more inner crazy.
Well, they have one about the Crocs, about Croc shoes as a great American invention. My favorite recent one was the one about Bob Novak, where it was like heaven welcoming him, like Godspeed, Bob.
And this is, before he died. I was also, I mean, anytime, you know, George Carlin being interviewed by Tim Russert in Hell was...
Yeah, it was, that's great.
Anytime somebody dies, it's always great just because it's like, you just see the way the cartoonist is, the way he presents himself. It's just like he has access to grind with everybody and everybody ends up
including
in
his ex-wife and his kids and, of course, hippies, the Kelly classics.
The Kelly classics.
Megan, everybody at the Atlantic is voting for Obama, right?
No, I do not believe that Ross Douthat is voting for Obama.
Okay.
I don't know which way.
So how does that play out in you know, in the weekly pillow fights at the Atlantic? I mean, or does you know, do you? At Reason, we're so out of partisan politics. I mean, we're not out of politics, but I think seriously, nobody cares about partisan politics very much. I mean, there's just not an attachment to a given party. But so it's a different dynamic. But how does it play out at the Atlantic?
Well, I mean, for me, like, I'm a little bit out of it because I don't care that much.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm going to vote for Obama, and then I'm going to hate everything he does.
Right.
And, like, I, you know, every time I think that he might get 60 senators, I wake up screaming. You know, so for me, like, I'm not rooting for one of the teams.
Yep.
I'm not super invested in, you know, which of these guys is better. Yep. They're politicians. I expect nothing good from any politician. But obviously, you know, people like Andrew Sullivan, Ross, Ta-Nehisi are very, you know, they're very much like sort of into the daily grind of the campaign in a way that I'm not. And so they have more sort of back and forth. Certainly Ross and Andrew have gone head-to-head on Obama versus McCain a couple of times.
And Biden's medical records.
Yeah. It's a great cover, by
I'm
the way.
Almost
it's really
to find out what's in Joe Biden's
It's like a receipt for his veneers and his Botox. I mean, it's...
He's actually using Nancy Reagan's medical records, which is why the pelvis is so...
Yeah. You took Amtrak down here, right? Was it magic?
The parts I was awake, it was it was beautiful.
Yeah. It is actually, it's a very nice service.
Cafe car?
Yeah.
It's terrific. Yeah.
Did you buy the Amtrak cards? You can buy a deck of cards for like $2 in the cafe car.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't.
It's like traveling across the West or something.
I stayed curled up in my seat trying to sleep the whole time.
Really?
And periodically, like I said, looking out the window and looking at the foliage. It was very nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did stop by on the way through Delaware. I did sort of perk up a little bit. And
yeah, sure. What was the cafe that closed like 30 years ago that Biden
was what was it called? Katie's?
I believe it was Katie's.
Yeah, which closed like in 80,
what did
like
he say?
Mid-80s.
Like the hash or something?
Yeah.
I mean, it was, why is Joe Biden taken seriously in a way that Sarah Palin is not? Because my presumption, I like Sarah Palin as a character, and she just comes from like a completely different planet than most politicians, which I just find interesting. But, I mean, if she's an idiot, clearly Joe Biden is. I mean, and he's got 30 years to back it up. But why do we take Joe Biden... Like, oh, he's a statesman.
My favorite part of the presidential and the vice presidential debates, really, so far, has been Obama and Biden hammering on financial deregulation.
Right.
I mean, this is the guy who, among financial journalists, is known as Joe Biden D-MBNA. Because he has presided over some of the most egregious giveaways to the financial industry in the history of the nation. And so when he...
You know, it's your nation, it's not my nation.
So when he and Obama start complaining about the Republican... Yeah. I mean, what I don't understand, and here is where I'm willing to say the media is giving Obama a pass on a bunch of stuff that they shouldn't be. And I wonder, when you say, like, it's hard to make fun of him, is it really hard to make fun of him, or is it just that, like, we all kind of like him, so it's hard to find, like... things as funny about him because they're giving him a pass. This is it's ridiculous that no one is bringing up every time Obama says anything about financial deregulation, Joe Biden's history should be trotted out, and it's not. And I'm not sure why, because he is basically, I mean, like, on foreign policy he may be fine, but sort of
actually he's a hawk. He's terrible.
On his domestic stuff,
not only is he a hawk, he just doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. In the vice presidential debate, he was talking about when we kicked Hezbollah out of Lebanon.
Yes.
And, like, anyone with was like, what the hell are you talking about? And then he, you know, switched gears into, like,
well,
you know,
he did get the Bosniak right, though.
Oh, he did get the Bosniak right, yeah.
He actually kind of reminds me of the quote about Lloyd Benson back in the 80s, that he was only in the Democratic Party to keep the Republicans from being embarrassed by his ties to big business. I mean, it really is... It's another one of those weird Democratic tickets where, like, you've got, like, a really hardcore liberal at the top, and let's just stick a corporate sellout who likes invading places balance it.
You first disliked and then embraced the bailout, right?
I disliked it. I embraced it. I dislike it. It's sort of going in the right direction right now. They're now doing what economists have been saying from the beginning, which is take preferred shares on this stuff to make it unattractive and force the banks to recapitalize. You know, for a libertarian, this is a little bit of a watershed moment, right? Although I've always been kind of squishy, and I've always, for example, been fond of the FDIC, which is something of a heretical position.
It's a plague, the FDIC. You know, how can you be free when your money is insured? Up to now, what, $250,000?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not taking any risks anymore.
No.
I wasn't before. I mean, libertarian journalism may pay better in the exotic reason world.
It certainly does. We get our money directly. G. Gordon Liddy comes by with gold bullion once a week.
Yeah. I do love this. I don't know if you guys ever get this. Like, periodically, people just come into the comment section of my blog, or they comment about me, and they're like, well, you're only doing this because, of course, you're corporate paymasters. If there's anything that pays less well than libertarian pundit, I mean, I might make more than, like, those Bangladeshi children who knot rugs, but...
they also write our jokes, too.
Yeah.
I have a question, though. Like, the thing that sort of baffles me is, why did this take people by surprise? Because the writing for this collapse was on the wall for at least the last 4 years, and people were, you know, up till last year, the stock market was at an all-time high, and then all of a sudden people are acting like it was like, where did this come from? It sort of baffles me.
What people didn't, I mean, the collapse of the mortgage market has not taken anyone, I mean, aside from, you know, like David Luria, who's famously the economist for the National Association of Realtors, and he's awesome. Like, it doesn't matter what happens.
It's
always,
it's a good time to buy.
Is that even a real name, David Luria?
Yeah,
it's a fake name.
Yeah. But so aside from him, everyone knew that the market was in a bubble. And everyone knew that housing prices were going to have to at least stagnate. But housing prices really haven't fallen in a sustained way since the Great Depression. More broadly, what people didn't see was, first of all, the way that the complexity of all these financial instruments, what's basically happened is the premium that people are demanding for uncertainty has gotten way beyond the losses. So because no one knows what's going on, and there's this problem of, like, if you're selling a mortgage security, it's probably your crappy one. You know more about it than me, so I don't want to buy it. Because of all of that stuff, the problem has gotten bigger than the actual losses. Even in subprime and Alt-A mortgages, which are the mortgage classes that are having the issues, they're not that, you know, I mean, the huge defaults, but the defaults are not 50%. They're not 80%.
They're still what? They're like 6 or 7?
No.
Delinquency
rate is defaults in subprime, I think, are around 9%. But the delinquency rate is still under 20.
It's like 3%.
Yeah,
it's
much higher.
Yeah.
But what people also didn't see was how tightly coupled the system was. That when you had this issue in mortgage-backed securities, because all the other securities that went off of them were so complicated, because AIG had written all these credit default swaps, because banks were overexposed, all of these things, they didn't expect it to trigger a run on various sorts of financial institutions. They expected the housing market to stagnate, some financial companies go out of business, sort of, possibly a recession because people feel poorer. What they did not definitely expect was for the entire thing to come crashing down.
How are you guys covering the bailout?
I mean, it's lots of laughs.
It's lots of laughs. I mean,
themselves.
Yeah, mortgage-backed securities. I mean, that's a...
I'm
laughing.
You're laughing already. You're like the Tavis Smiley. You laugh before the joke even comes.
I don't even know. I mean, the thing is, it's hard to cover because we just don't know what direction it's going to go. You know, it passes and then the stock market plummets and then they come out and like give you some details and the stock market skyrockets and then the jobs numbers come out and the numbers fall again and they're falling again today. So it's just so because we're on a weekly schedule, there's almost nothing we can, you know.
When did you start doing the stocks? Because you do fake stock reports, don't you?
We've been doing that for about 3 years now.
Uh-huh.
We did do a Goldman Sachs. Was it Goldman Sachs? I think that was this week. And it was like the numbers were through the roof because people looked out the window and noticed that it was not on fire. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it was probably a very safe investment.
Yeah.
You know, there's other. We did the stat. What is the $700 million or what is the $700 million bailout bringing us? And it was, $100 million walking around money, things like that. But it's hard. You know, it's hard to really actually. Because part of it is you have to explain what's going on, and if you have to explain it before you tell the joke,
it's not funny.
No. So all you can do is just do it in the most broad possible way.
Is it pretty common? We had an example of this in Sweden when I was working as a journalist there. A friend of mine pointed out in the morning newspaper a story that seemed a bit off right after the Duke lacrosse scandal. And it turned out that a journalist for this main newspaper in Sweden had basically plagiarized an Onion story, thinking it was a real story. And it was about the Duke equestrian team, something about strip dressage and everything. And they reported this. I mean, how often does that actually... I mean, it must have happened a lot more in the beginning. People are kind of wise to what the Onion is now. But in Europe, I've seen it a couple of times, actually.
I mean, it happened. There was probably our favorite cases where... a Chinese newspaper picked up a story, including the graphic, about the...
I remember this.
It was about the Congress threatening to move unless a new Capitol building was was constructed. And that... and then they actually... It was great because I think it was a blogger for Wired contacted the editor and said, well, you know the Onion's a fake newspaper, right? And his response was, well, how do you know it's a fake newspaper?
Yeah, yeah.
And they
that's a good question, actually. Yeah.
He absolutely refused to... he refused to retract for about a week, and then finally he said... You know, and then finally when they issued their retraction, it wasn't, well, we fucked up. It was, well, you know, in some cases in America, people tell fake stories mm-hmm. to make money.
Yeah.
And that was, and he had our number in that respect.
Yeah.
Exactly that.
What happened to the Onion movie?
The Onion movie, I'll finish the sentence, is, well, I'll do it in the style of a pull quote from a movie poster. The Onion movie... is available on DVD.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And it is about relationships, right?
Mm.
And it skipped the theater. It was just too complicated.
It wasn't ready.
So
American
it's like
audience
the Left Behind, the original Left Behind movie.
No, Left Behind, the original was actually in the theaters.
It actually started in video stores, and it was an interesting attempt
to... It was screened in all these churches.
Yeah, they were trying to build up
Robert Greenwald style of doing it.
Yeah, what was it? You know, Robert Greenwald, the guy who does the anti-Walmart movie and Outfox.
Yeah, and directed Xanadu.
Which is like...
Yes, Robert Greenwald, Outfoxed... Iraq War for Sale, Walmart, also directed Xanadu. Yeah.
Which I think is a more seething indictment of American capitalism.
American
than
culture,
anything,
than,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We are going to wrap things up. Joe, tell us about your new book.
Well, I'll say for Onion purposes, I'll say Our Dumb World is coming out in paperback. That's the Onion's mm-hmm. Atlas of the World. Coming out in paperback at the end of the month. And I also have a book called The Devious Book for Cats, which is
fascinating.
Oh,
it's a parody of The Daring Book for Girls.
Right.
And it's, as cat books go, fantastic.
That's it for today. I'm Nick Gillespie for Reason TV. With me are Michael Moynihan of Reason, Megan McArdle of The Atlantic, and Joe Garden of The Onion.